If you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom. She's Jay-Z on the board. He's Mr. Brendan Cornell with us, as he is every Tuesday. We have S&P futures. Everybody's hacking around a flat line now. They're like up a buck, up 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up a buck and a quarter. So, not much going on there. We have Whole Foods saying they will slash prices on hundreds of items starting Wednesday. However, if our man shuts the border, I gotta believe some of those vegetable prices are gonna go right back up. Not to mention tequila.
Which is more important, the vegetables or the tequila?
Depends on what time of the day.
All right, it's 6 in the morning. Which
I'd say the vegetables right about now. But the Dow futures up 9. Are we... I've got this real eerie feeling, Brendan. I was reading some stuff last night. And I don't want to start in on some political vent here this morning, but I tell you what. I'm like the guy who says, quite frankly, and it tells a lie. I don't want to start in on this one. I'm going to start right in on it.
Mm-hmm. No offense, man, but...
Yeah, no offense, but by the way, where'd you get those socks? Yeah.
Did you look at my socks this morning when you came in?
No. Try not to look at anything like that, especially early in the morning. What is it? Ask me no questions, I'll tell you no lies.
Yeah.
I just have this odd feeling... It's some, you know, and I know I always, sometimes I'm wrong, Brendan, sometimes I'm just a little early. I don't know which one this one is, but I was reading some stuff yesterday that it seems somewhat apparent as to what's going on, and maybe even, but in the world we live in, I think a lot of, put it this way, a lot of people don't quite get, this politics is becoming entertainment. And it's almost like their guy in the or their girl in the Bachelor or something everybody's rooting for or whatever.
You mean like a reality show?
Yeah, it's getting sort of
like an Apprentice,
something like that. Yeah. I was reading yesterday that the idea with the the Federal Reserve, I mean, the thought of Larry Kudlow, who to me has been disingenuous for years, Goldilocks economy, greatest story never told.
Mm-hmm.
He was on CNBC just ranting and raving about how they want this half a point rate to decrease. I've never seen anything like that before, in anything that I've seen or read about. I mean, I know Bush was not happy with Greenspan. You know, he thought he cost him the election. I mean, there's been Nixon didn't like Schultz, right?
Mm-hmm.
But never to this stage. And I was reading an article yesterday about what was the one guy? The guy who took over for. Gross, Muhammad Al, whatever his name is.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was saying that there's no question right now that if the market goes down anywhere in the next 18 months, the abuse of this guy is going to be brutal.
Mm-hmm.
The administration. I mean, we're having a president now who wants to be a dictator, and I'll say that to anybody. He's decided that the economy's fantastic because he's looking at the economy like it's the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And refuses to look at like individual people that are getting buried by some stuff. So the economy, the stock market is now the economy, is now his scorecard, and he's convinced now that the Federal Reserve is in charge of his scorecard. And this is going down a road that I think really really sucks.
Mm-hmm.
but is it just me, or am I being a knucklehead here? Am I reading too much?
There's also controversy about his appointments to the board. I mean, he's been hammering away at Powell, and the new guy that he just appointed. Is getting mixed reviews from the market. The guy in San Francisco who's just appointed to the Fed position.
Yeah.
As someone who may not really have the best background. Well, he hasn't been confirmed yet, has he?
No.
But there's a lot of controversy about his background and his depth of the market. Or whether he's just there as somebody who will vote the way Trump wants him to vote.
Well, that seems to be the shtick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see where the hell we're going here, because every one of these institutions that's there to challenge, he's pretty much challenging. I mean, he pretty much made the Senate lay down.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's trying to do that with the Fed. I mean, is this
all... Well, he did it with the House, too. Yeah. He did it with the House for the first 2 years that the Republicans were in control right. under Paul Ryan.
But is this really all about him, or is it about governance?
I think it's more about him than it is about governance.
I know a lot of people don't. I was out to dinner the other night, and there was a gentleman and his wife. I'm assuming it was his wife. You never know these days. And they just were talking a little louder and a little meaner than you ever would have before this guy got in.
Mm-hmm.
And do other people not notice that? Or
well, I've noticed that. I've noticed a tenor across the board in public as well as on media. That it is a lot nastier and a lot more vocal than it was before.
I'm not so sure that it's just, I know, Brandon, I've been doing a lot of, I've always did do some reading, I don't know about a lot compared to other people, but, and you look at what the, we've had people that have, somewhat saved us, and, let's put it this way, we had George Washington at the right time, we had Abraham Lincoln at the right time, I think we had Roosevelt at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And we hit bottom pretty close in the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And today, if you don't, the more I read about it, coming out of this mess, out of those messes, was not at all a given. I mean, I'm not the guy who married Tricky Dick's daughter, not David Eisenhower, the other guy, wrote this information op-ed thing. He works for a right-wing think tank, which is fine. He writes his paper. It's pretty brilliant. He's talking about how people aren't going to stop the incredible rancor until we hit bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You don't talk to you, according to John's wife, Bridge, who's a judge, you don't basically talk to you pissed away 40% of your money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then finally, even if you hate each other, you figure out a way to talk. Mm-hmm. Because you got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But, the idea that we can just hit bottom and all of a sudden everything will be okay, looks to me like about three or four times in our history we came real close to not being okay. And I'm not sure that you want to go there again.
Well, how do you know that you are at the bottom or when the bottom is going to be hit? I mean, what are the characteristics that you're looking for?
Not being able to pay your debts. Another recession when you already are at 1% interest rate and mm-hmm. you already are at $1 trillion in a hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, well, what can we do?
And the deficit is growing.
Yeah. I mean, we're not that far away.
And the Fed has less room to maneuver.
That's
if,
right.
if there is a significant downturn.
But, and you also with the idea that we're totally confused. I mean, when I say we, people that I, let's put it this way, people our age, this is not a shot, Jay-Z, people our age that at least have some memories of the fiasco we had with the inflation and the recession last time
mm-hmm.
in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
At least have some collective memory.
21%
of
what prime rate.
Of how bad things were in that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an idea of what the difference is between nominal growth and real growth.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody, if you can listen all day long. And when these numbers come out on the GNP and so GDP, now we don't do GNP anymore. Not one person brings up, well, is this nominal growth or is, and when you're pouring money into the system like we do, we're talking even this week, we're bit down a little bit from 6 to 5.7 increase in M2. We're talking about crisis numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're talking about we're in the best economy ever. So why the hell do you have crisis numbers coming out of the Fed? I mean, if you're doing that, if you're pouring that into the place, and your growth is, let's say, optimistically 2, and I can make an argument towards negative,
mm-hmm.
A pretty good argument, by the way, the difference between, in other words, I know I'm stumbling a little bit here, but Home Depot comes out. Our stuff was, we had 5% same store sales last year. Well, Plasterboard went up 15, you didn't get anywhere. Matter of fact, you're going backwards. We have, nobody even asks that question anymore. And because it's out of our collective memory of anybody under the age of 55, if we never ask it, are we doomed to the same rat hole we got into 1979?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope not. Because people of today will not understand how bad that was.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And our economy today is much different than it was back then, as far as industrials and the manufacturing jobs we had then compared to now.
Well, that's right. In the service industry, I think is much more, shall we say, concerned about rent from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you push up asset prices, meaning buildings and stocks, you're affecting everybody from every restaurant to dry cleaners to drugstore. Look what's happening across the street here. These guys, they lost their, they had a, you know, I don't know how, a big building, the insurance exchange. I mean, it's actually the third biggest building in the city, believe it or not. It's a full square block. Obviously, the merchandise mart's the biggest, and what the Sears Tower or whatever the thing is now is the second biggest, right?
Willis, a.k.a. Sears Tower.
Yeah. Anyway, these guys lost. They ran into a jam with the restaurant bar in the building. So they decided, okay, you guys are out of here. Over $3,000 a month. They wanted 15. 15 is mm-hmm. a lot for a small
yeah.
place. And that's a lot of burgers and beers.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys leave. And now the people bought the building. So the 800 people have left the building in the last 2 years since the bar restaurant left. Now, I'm not saying that was causative, but if you're a law firm or if you want somebody, you want somewhere in your building, especially a building that size where you can eat.
Right.
Without going out. So, mm-hmm. anyway, so now all of a sudden the CVS, which has been there forever, they raise their rent, they're moving.
Mm-hmm.
So once you start going down this rat hole, all of a sudden whatever these guys paid for the place, they probably paid too much. Now all of a sudden they got to raise everybody's leases. And we're not making that kind of money. We're out.
Well, it's interesting. I've noticed that there's a number of Starbucks that have been closed in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about the ubiquitousness of Starbucks and that they'd continue to pop up, but they're not. And there was one that was over at North in Sheffield in a little small strip mall center. And we used to go in there after our Saturday morning runs and have a cup of coffee afterwards and just socialize. We asked them, why are you guys closing? And they said that the landlord tripled their rent
right.
when the lease expired. And I've noticed that there are at least four other Starbucks around where I used to frequent that are closed. And while I didn't talk to them as much as we talked about to this one at North Avenue, I suspect that a big part of the problem is that the rents are increasing dramatically.
I think it's a – I don't know how much of it is new owners, new prices, but I think that the taxes and the utilities are burying these people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I notice every place I go – I mean, I try and get around and talk to people. Every place I go, prices are going up, portions are going down. It's to the point where, I mean, I have a couple guys, buddies of mine, they're in the restaurant group. You should stop in at the Tripoli some night. He's been on the show a couple times. Butcher Al owns two places. And he tells me that it's to the point where you almost don't care what people eat. You need $50 for somebody walking in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you notice, if you go to Italian restaurants now, the price of a spaghetti and meatballs is almost the same as like veal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't get a plate of spaghetti for under $16.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with I could spaghetti this room for $16,
mm-hmm.
right? By the way, I'm not a bad Italian cook, but the point being is it has nothing to do. The first I noticed that, I mentioned this before. Back in the 90s, we were at a bunch of people that flew out for a board meeting, and somehow or another, I don't know, everybody got there late, and it wasn't the usual dinner the night before, so we were right around Central Park South. So Mickey Mantle's had just opened up a new, I don't think, I'm not sure Mickey was still alive. He might have been. But they'd open up this little steak place right on Central Park South. And so we wander in, and, you know, this was New York, so even then the steaks were $35. This, you know, this is 1993,
mm-hmm.
And the burgers were like $25, and I'm like, Wow. And it dawns on me. If your fanny's coming in the door at Mickey Mantle's, you're paying $30 for dinner. You might as well have a steak.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with, you know, the whether the burger costs as much as a steak, because obviously it doesn't. But these guys are so far off the chart when it comes to what I would consider to be, cost accounting. Most of your dinners now are 5 to 5.5 times what it costs them, and your drinks are pushing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can get any further, Brendan. I honestly don't. Other than people just are going to go out no matter what and have money. But you're reaching a point where, like, what am I doing?
You can't do that too many times.
No, you can't.
Because the earnings aren't being generated.
Well, some
to
people still have
earnings.
Some people still will rule out earnings. I mean, if you're in the right spot, if you're an asset person, your stuff's running up. Or, you know, if you're in a company that's doing well, or you're in a company that's attached to your government, you're doing fine.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think that there's always people who are doing well. But I think that, overall, the silent inflation is taking a bigger effect on more people than you're giving credit for right now. And those are the people who, instead of going out 3 times a week, will go out now twice or
once.
Well,
bring your family to breakfast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. But that's my point.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to the, I like, for some reason, when I go to the Restaurant Depot, the guys who do work for me and stuff, I can buy, last time I bought a case of jumbo eggs, 12 dozen jumbo eggs. Guess how much?
I don't know.
Pick a number, man.
I don't know.
$15.71.
Mm-hmm.
So it was $1.25. So I gave them to the neighbors, I gave them to everybody. And yet, how many omelets is that? You know, you can't, you find an omelet less than $12 in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how many omelets are in that $15 case? I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're being absolutely starved. One of my, like I said, this one gentleman I talked to, he says to the point where if turn your numbers around, Brendan. I mean, instead of saying, okay, I need to, if I sell this plate of pasta for $20, I'm doing fine. You can't look at it that way. You got to look at how many people come in the door, how many people can sit down, what can your turnover be? And if you're going to get two groups at a table, that's, and you got 20 tables, and most places don't, say you got 12 tables, if you get 4 people at a table, which you don't always, probably average, what, 3?
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking maybe 60 people a night. And his point is, okay, if I get $35 a person times, and if I'm full, which is another maybe, I make a little bit. So in other words, if 4 people sit down and they have one appetizer, a glass of wine, and it's $30 a person, $32 a person, because I'm losing. If they have 2 glasses of wine and it's, $36 a person, I'm breaking even. If they have dessert, then I'm making money.
Mm-hmm.
And you would never think of it that way. I mean, because it doesn't matter what they have. I mean, he says the most, out of his pasta dishes, his, the thing that costs him the most to make, take a guess.
The actual cost?
Yeah.
$5.
Yeah, well, what would it be? Actually, it's $4.50. What would it be?
Something like a quick pasta dish.
No, it's clam sauce, because he actually loses real clams. So that's $4.50, and he charges $22 for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and it's not enough. You know, I mean, we don't. You can't make. It has to do that if somebody has a glass of wine or a drink or 2 of them, then you're okay. It's still, because you need the dough. It's not. Mm-hmm. It has nothing. It's almost to the point where if you walk in, and you hand him a grant, meaning a 50, just sit down and eat. I'll feed you whatever you want. And you can drink whatever you want. It's almost that point.
Mm-hmm.
And because you just, you know, and it's really scary. And it's all because of rent. It's because of taxes. I think these places are being buried in taxes.
Well, I think they are too. I mean, you look at the tax increase in the whole Chicago area, and it's going to get worse in the next couple of years because of the pension amounts that are due. It's going to be a big challenge for the new mayor, who, by the way, will know this time tomorrow.
Or we'll know. I think we already know. If people show up, we got to.
Well, you know, don't go down that path yet. That's where people get mistaken. If you look at the polls, you're going to say it's over already and Lori Lightfoot is going to win. But, you know, there were polls in October of 2016 that said something too.
Well, yeah, I, the only thing I'm this, in effect, this reminds me of that election. It's somebody, you have no idea what they're going to do, and most people don't know who the hell she is,
mm-hmm.
against somebody you can't stand.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair?
I think it's a fair assessment, yes.
Does this sound familiar?
You know, it's always the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. And are you willing to take a chance that the devil you don't know will keep you afloat because you know or despise the person that you do know?
Nobody likes to spread Winkle. I don't know what she continues to market herself as, but sure as hell doesn't look like anything I want. I mean, I have a real issue with this. I have a real issue with everything this morning, it seems. I have a real issue with somebody being mayor that can only come up with 80,000 votes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know where that comes from. How's a lady who's the head of the party and the head of the
county.
Cook County, and you know, how does she get 78,000 votes?
And not even the leading vote getter,
right,
in the crowd of 14,
right? I don't. I absolutely don't get it.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see. I mean, Bill Daley looked to me like he didn't even really campaign. Just uh-huh. threw his name in the hat.
Yeah, he had a kind of a quiet campaign, thinking that the money that he supported and the groups that he had lined up, and quite honestly, I think he would have won, except for the appearance of one or two other candidates specifically in this race.
But he would have gotten if Joyce didn't run.
Uh-huh.
You can't say Vallis was a problem. He only got 1,500 votes or something.
Right. I mean, no, it was Joyce. It was Joyce who took away the
Southside
runoff. Irish. Yeah.
And but even so, he would have had what? 85,000 votes or 80?
Yeah.
Which is horrible.
Yeah. He would definitely have not have had 20% of the vote and made it into the runoff ahead of Preckwinkle.
He would. I think he would have. I mean, like I say, if Joyce didn't run.
Yeah, if Joyce didn't run, you know, maybe. So what did he get? 16.5%?
He was about 5,000 below Preckwinkle, wasn't he?
About 7,000, but a little bit behind Preckwinkle. So if you give him 80% of the Joyce votes, I think Joyce had about 9,000 or 10,000 votes. So you give him another 8,000, 7,500, 800, he would have surpassed Preckwinkle. But still, you're talking about somebody that
I don't think the Joyce votes
would have
gone to Preckwinkle.
No, I don't.
No, I don't think so.
But what I'm saying is that if Joyce wasn't in there, those votes primarily would have gone to Daley. And that would have been enough to put him into the second spot, so it would have been Daley and Lightfoot in the runoff.
What is the vote total? I mean, you're closer to this than me. What does the total lack of interest say to you? If there were so many people, you couldn't get behind somebody. That's what we were having kind of in this discussion last night. You know, that you couldn't get involved because there were so many people you didn't know who to vote for or that again.
Well, those are legitimate questions, but I think also people are willing to rant and rave but not do anything. You know, I mean, I was taught growing up that you vote in every election, and if you don't vote, you've got no right to complain or bitch about anything that anybody's doing. I mean, if you don't like what's happening with the taxes, you don't like what's happening with the parking meter, if you didn't vote in the last election, regardless of who you voted for, but if you didn't vote, you don't have a right to complain about it. Because you forfeited that by not taking a stand on election day.
I know that we were all taught that, and my grandfather, who was an immigrant from Italy, used to love being the first guy at the voting booth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's like, you don't get to do this anywhere else in the world, mm-hmm. which obviously you do in other places in the world, but this is why I'm here, you know, type of thing. Yet the idea that going down the block, let's put it this way, I've become so jaundiced about this in my particular spot, and now that you're sort of in the same area, you'll find out that you'll end up walking down there and seeing everything unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
All these decisions are made by you before you get there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of the time. And it really does piss you off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there have been times I've walked down the block and said, what am I even doing here?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's when I first met Eric. I was all pissed off about voting, went to the Tripoli, and he sits down next to me and he goes, where are you coming from? I go, the voting thing. I just voted no for all the judges and everybody else was unopposed. He goes, man, I did the same thing. That's how our friendship started.
Mm-hmm.
We voted the guy in who got booted out of the Senate. What was his name? Smith? He's our guy. So we ended up voting him in after he got booted out. I'm going to say the last election, who's on, did, well, actually, what's his name? Quigley had some well, I don't want to say some loser, but somebody actually challenged him, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did he win by? Like 90% of the time?
Something like that, yeah.
So, I mean, other than that, I'm going to say everybody else was unopposed.
Yeah, it was, well, and you know, that is the, well, I think there's two reasons for that. One, there's certain power politics that effectively deny people running for office. That's why you see so many that are unopposed in the state legislature. And the second thing is that it's apathy. People are getting to the point where they don't care, that they don't think their vote counts, so why even bother? And that is a terrible thing to have happen.
Well, it is. S&P futures up 175. NASDAQ futures up 2. Dow futures down 7. Not much this morning after a big rally yesterday. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Brennan Cornan, Jay-Z on the board. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, right, Jay-Z?
Totally.
Totally. S&P futures up 75 cents, NASDAQ futures up 3. Dow futures are unchanged around the rest of the world. Again, we had a big rally yesterday, so the fact that we're not down is probably good. DAX up 64 points, 0.5%. A little bit of catch-up. FTSE up 58.8%. Yak around up 17.3%. Over in Asia, and these guys have been sort of celebrating for a while here. That's today flat. Nikkei down 3 points, it's flat. Shanghai up 6, that's flat. Hang Seng up 62, that's 0.2%. Oil continues on its roll, 62.03. Although the XLE continues to lag, and the reason why the XLE continues to lag is Schlumberger, and some point, or maybe Joel can tell us, is can't get out of its own way. It's half price than it was 2 years ago. It's the third biggest stock in the XLE. So even though I would recommend to most people on the retail side that if you were bullish on oil things, that you would buy, you know, the XLE, which is the oil part of the S&P, it has, you know, behaved a little bit in your favor, but really not the way I wanted it or somebody else because really of one stock. So Brent is up 14 cents. Natural gas unchanged. RBOB gas unchanged at $1.90. So that's not a good filling up the car. Gold down another $1.70, $12.92. Silver down 8 cents. The metals market still not going anywhere. Jay-Z, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Chicago weather today is a little chilly this morning still. We got a high of 55, low of 36. Mostly cloudy today. Phoenix is also cloudy with a high of 87, low of 58. In basketball last night, the Bulls lost to the Knicks 113-105, while the Suns beat the Cavaliers 122-113. In baseball, the White Sox lost to the Indians 5-3, Cubs lost to the Braves 8-0, and the Diamondbacks beat the Padres 10-3. In NCAA women's, Baylor beat Iowa 85-53, and the Irish girls beat Stanford 84-68. Finally, in hockey, the Blackhawks lost to the Jets 4-3 while the Suns were off. In traffic, there's one accident on the Dan Ryan going west at the Stevenson Expressway. Crash is blocking the ramp. Nothing else to report. Back to you.
So our girls are better than their girls.
Yes. Yep. But what happened to the Cubs' bats?
What happened to the Cubs' gloves? Six errors last night.
They're emulating the White Sox.
Yeah, they're bad. I don't know. We'll see if they turn that bus around. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Great, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm okay. How come you didn't do the proper thing when Michigan lost? Just saying. Where are you?
Is that how you react when your sports team lose?
No, I'd have been gone a long time ago if I did.
Didn't have high expectations, Chief.
Yeah.
For some reason or another, I just, you know, I usually get super psyched, super excited. I book my plans for the Final Four. But this year, you know, with the freshman being the leading scorer, you know, inconsistency, we had an easy front end of the schedule, and, you know, once it got tougher near the end. So I was crushed. I didn't cry. I was upset. But, you know, you just got to move on. And, hey, it saves me, you know, a few shekels not schlepping to the Final Four. So
yep.
Good season. They lost three players to the NBA or the minor leagues of the NBA. You know, they'll be back. So, you know, you can't win them all. That, when you look at it, only one team of 64 wins it. I'm not sure who's it going to be. It could be those Spartans, I'll tell you. They got a lot of depth. They got a lot of experience. Cassius Winston's an incredible guard. Senior Kenny Goins, You know, they're banger. And the other thing, too, is one of their best players is injured. So State looks good. Virginia's the, you know, the money favorite with the experience. I mentioned Texas Tech, that they got that great guard that is incredible. I don't think it was so much their, I mean, they had a great defense, but we were 1-for-19 from three-point land. So Auburn, the sentimental favorite, they lost their star player on Friday to a major injury. You got to love Bruce Pearl. And I think when you break down that Duke game, I blame it on Coach K. I think it was poor coaching. The way they were trying to lob the ball into Zion, he should have come up with a different kind of pass. He should have done a simple bounce pass. So, Coach K, I mean, you know, who am I to criticize? Probably the greatest basketball coach of all time. But I just thought poor coaching on his part. Isabel coached him. And
what did
he
out-coached
Beeline three times. So, that's my breakdown on the Final Four. Your XLE chief, I know, I mean, laggards are called laggards for a reason. And, you know, I know how aggravating that is. Nice move in oil. Finally took back the 50, you know, part of that big move coming off the, what was that, the October, November high around 78 bucks. So took back the 50% retracement. It took a long time. But you're working on your, fifth straight up month in, or actually fourth straight up month in oil.
Well, that's right, and I do think that what David was saying yesterday, if oil goes much higher, he thinks gold will rally too, because it'll
mean. You know what the big news is today, Chief? The big news. Yeah, the big news.
Okay, fire away.
It used to be real big news. Bitcoin.
Yeah,
Bitcoin is surging here. Got close to, I didn't look at all the, I look at the futures, obviously. I see them trading up 675. Man, but you talk about a sleepy chart and, you know, consolidation station, and then boom, just like in the charts, you break a resistance level. What I'm hearing, and I don't know if this is verifiable, is there was like a big algo program went through a bunch of the exchanges, triggering a $100 million spread across Coinbase, Kraken, and Bitstamp. And boy, oh boy, the shorts were sleeping, and they got crushed. So, important move here. I was going to play with the GBTC a little bit, but I only just got a small piece. Now I have to decide what to do, if there's a breakout or a fake out. The best thing would be for it to just kind of wither back down to 4,000, old resistance, new support, but not sure that's going to happen. And, The shorts are getting squeezed at Bitcoin ahead of Cboe canceling their contracts.
Well, what about all the people who a year ago were eagerly getting paid and stuff in Bitcoin? First of all, how easy is it to short Bitcoin?
It's very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like...
Yep.
I think it would be very hard, but it doesn't surprise me, Joel, that the government's going the way they're going, in the fact that they're all over you in every transaction. I'm gonna say that. In fact, a real quick one, which you know don't normally do when you're in the people who are doing the real estate transactions, like my significant other. You can't bring. You know, I used to bring a couple hundred bucks in case something was off by $50. You could actually pay for it in cash. You can't do that anymore.
Can't do that.
And also, you can't give a check. Can't bring a certified check.
Got to wire the money in the day before.
And yet, Maddie Weber says that by now, by far, the most dangerous thing right now is wiring money. Out of any of those things. And yet, we can't turn the rules back. And wiring money is getting hijacked, I guess, all over the place. And people are intercepting and stuff. So why can't the dumb bureaucrats that make these rules in the first place see where it's going and back up on the rules? Is that saying you're wrong and you can't ever do that, or what? And are we going to live with these rules the rest of our life? I don't know. A quick question for you, Joel. I know you're a little bit of a conspiracy guy. Did you watch the 60 Minutes last week? We'll talk more about this later with Brennan, but where they were talking about that Israeli firm that has this Pegasus software that you can pretty much hack anybody's phone. And they have their own... It was the most pompous... That guy was the most pompous ass I've ever seen on TV. How they have their own internal corporate board that figures out who's going to be use the stuff improperly. It's only to be used to fight terrorists. Yet they sold it to the Saudis. Right?
I did see that clip, and I did not see the entire thing. So I really don't want to comment on.
Well, my question is, now that they are accusing Bezos' hack to be attributed to both the Saudis, why am I the only one putting two and two together?
I'm not going to comment on that, Chief.
All right, well, don't. But that's okay. That's fine.
I mean, yeah, you know, I comment on everything, but when I don't have enough knowledge on the situation, I just don't comment. Got a big no comment out of me on that one.
Let me rephrase the question. Were you a little surprised that Bezos' phone was hacked? The guy can't.
No.
No?
No.
Really? Okay. I would have thought that he would have had one pretty secure.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, what's he doing putting stuff like that on his phone?
Well.
I mean, come on. Give me a break. I mean, you know, that's what I have to say. So my no comment turned into a negative.
You know what I think I should do? If I knew how to do it, which I don't, because I just use my phone for texts and messages. I don't even know how to use the other stuff. Although, get a load of this, Joel, I do know how to use the Chicago Parking Meter app now. That's my only app I use.
I
figured that one out.
Yep, I've used a few of those. But, I hope no one got stuck in that Lyft IPO.
No,
that
wow.
What a ass, you know, I don't want to get in trouble here, but what a whooping that took. And we had a great guy from your Chicago area on the show talking about it, saying stay away. So I got a hot Chief.
All right, Joel.
As always, with the Go Blue.
All right, buddy. Talk to you next week. SP Futures up 50 cents. We got NASDAQ Futures up 4. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Brennan Cornan in the studio. We have Jay-Z in the studio. We have Mr. Kenny Polcari on the line. SP Futures up a whole 75 cents. Not much so far, but not actually a sell-off either yesterday after yesterday's huge rally. We're beating up on the Fed. Kenny's been calling some of his boys that are knee-knockers that have visited all the Fed guys and let them know if they don't do what the Trump says, their family and everybody's going to disappear, just like in Saudi Arabia or something. Kenny, how are you? Good morning on a Tuesday.
Dude, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. The more I'm reading now, boy, I'm starting to get it's becoming like a deep state here. Right? I don't know what, but we're talking about it, somebody being emboldened. But last night there was a Muhammad Al-Arian saying if the market goes down at any point during the next 18 months, you won't want the abuse that they pile on this Powell guy. This is the... This is the world we've come to see, Kenny. Did we ever think we were going to get here or what?
Well, you know, I'm not necessarily sure we ever thought we were going to get here, but, you know, and we've discussed this a long time. We've been through kind of an unprecedented time certainly in our history. And so I don't really think that people know what the outcome's going to look like or feel like or how it should really happen, right? So it's kind of almost being blind, right? You got to feel your way. You have to feel and see what feels right, what feels wrong, what feels like it's going to work, or what feels like it isn't going to work. And I think that's kind of the process we're in at the moment. So it is what it is.
I'm getting this horrible feeling, even though I really hoped he was going to do a pretty good job because he was from the outside. That we've got a guy that it's becoming all about power. That every time he pushes and gets something, he pushes harder. It's all about consolidation of power at this point. And to me, this is, I sure hope I'm wrong, Kenny, but it's starting to really smell.
No, well, I guess we're going to see now as the weeks turn into months as we move forward. But, you know, I'm not so sure it's beginning to smell so much. I just think that it is going to be concerning. I mean, every single time when the data looks good and the data looks like it's turning around and Jay Powell talks about, you know, normalizing or raising rates, everyone throws a hissy fit, the algos throw a hissy fit, and the market goes into a deep dive, everyone goes, oh, no, you got to stop. Well, at what point does the Fed just say, look, we got to do this, and it is going to be what it's going to be? And I'm not sure that he's able to do that, right? I'm just not sure that he's got the guts or the Fed's got the guts to watch the market melt down. We saw what happened between October and December. Whether you want to say it was right or wrong, the fact is the market melted down so quickly and created such nervousness and angst and anxiety that you saw the pivot, right? They did a complete pivot. And now look, we're almost back near the high. We're 30 points away from 2900 on the S&P, which brings us right back to, actually, last night we closed right at the level we were at on October 5th when the whole meltdown started. And so it's going to be interesting to see how we move from here, right? Do we back off a little bit, or do we search higher?
I hope that history does not repeat, but it may. I don't know if I've ever told you this, Kenny, but a long time ago, way back, I was scooting along on a Saturday morning early, like only I do. I'm listening to radio, and I hit some guy on in one of those interview shows, and he was a former Federal Reserve guy during, you know, late 60s, up to the mid-70s. Actually, he was on there a long time. And he was saying that when the oil embargo came by, you know, first we went off Bretton Woods, and we went off the gold standard, and we started flooding we didn't think we were flooding, but we were putting money into the system to help pay for the Vietnam War debt and blah, 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 and we're kind of bouncing along, and the Arab thing came along, and then we started getting all this inflation. But it started out in oil, and then it started percolating its way through, and we kept making all these excuses. Well, it's food because there's so much transportation involved in food that it's really because of the oil. It became a one-off. We kept pulling things out of the thing, one-off. Meanwhile, Milton Friedman's running around Washington telling people that we're the source of the problem, and nobody believed him. And all of a sudden, one day, we go to a meeting, and it was Arthur Burns, one of the guys, turns around and says, you know what, guys, we can't lie to ourselves anymore. We got inflation. I think at some point what's going to happen is, if it keeps happening, somebody somewhere of higher note than you and me is going to get on national TV and say, we got a problem.
I think you're right. And I don't know when that's going to happen, though, right?
No, I thought it would happen by now, but it hasn't.
Because I disagree when they talk about no inflation in this country. I think there's big inflation in this country, certainly on have you been to a grocery store lately? Have you gone food shopping lately? Have you seen the prices of the staples? I mean, the stuff that you need to eat. $6 for a box of cereal is beyond me.
Well, I think here with Kenny, he's Brennan. We were just talking about it before you came on, that in the Chicago area, it's spitting out everywhere there's a lease.
Yeah,
because of the taxation and everything, which we don't count. It's coming at us in different ways. It's coming at us from taxation, from fees. It's coming at us from medical expenses, which, we're not counting. And if we get anything on top of that, like oil or everything, then we got a real problem. But here it's education, it's medical, and it's taxation and fees.
I think that's across the country, though, medical. That's not just a Chicago event. That's certainly here in New York as well and across the country.
Well, but we have... We have here, Kenny, we've attempted, because we're so deep in the hole, we've attempted to start to finance someone's pension obligation and so forth by continual tax raises, and we're talking 20-30% raises on people to where, like Brendan was just talking about the Starbucks that he goes in. There's Starbucks closing here. They want to raise our rent three times. I mean, there's places leaving it that are successful companies. We're not talking about Kenny and Chief's bologna sandwich shop, and we're talking about places that know how to run a business. Not that we don't. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you start seeing CVS is walking out of the building.
History.
We're CVS walking out of the building across the street. They've been there 20 years. I mean,
listen, the same is happening in New York. Did you see the Wall Street Journal article, the opinion piece yesterday? I actually sent it out on a Twitter about Cuomo, blasting. You can only raise taxes so much on everybody, whether it's rich people, whatever. And all of a sudden the state is starting to lose it. And there's a big op-ed piece, in yesterday's paper about how out of touch they are, him and de Blasio, in terms of what they're doing to the state and the loss of wealthy people to the state. They're tired of it. They're just exhausted with it. Now they're talking about luxury pricing on, high priced condos, and they're talking about congestion pricing in the city, and you just keep hitting people over the head when it costs you $15 to go over the bridge from Westchester into the city, or from Staten Island into the city, or the GW Bridge into the city. It costs you $15 just to come over the bridge, and then they're going to hit you again with another congestion pricing if you go below 60th Street and you're driving a car. And so it's all the rage here in New York, and it's going to, I just see it, it's going to end up imploding on them.
Well, their feel, which is unfortunate because I've had a bunch of them on the show, a bunch of them, people who work for the city, they still have this feeling that we're doing all these good things for people, and it's just up to you to give us as much money as we need, and we really don't. You can't get. I really do believe, Kenny, as you probably expect, I have different people that I talk to. I'm going to say, in all 10 walks of life, from the underneath the bridge guy to the 1%er, and I'm not so sure any one of those groups can handle much more. Even the people that make $250,000 a year, have the nice home and the two kids in school. I don't think they have $25,000 in the bank to kick to somebody.
No doubt about it. I agree with you, and I'm not sure what. Nobody sees, but then you elect people like, and listen, I understand it happened with the far right a couple of years ago with the Tea Party. And now this year it's happening with the far left and, the Green New Deal and people like AOC and these far left wings that all they want to do is take it, redistribute, and make sure that everybody has, everybody has everything. Everybody should share equally and everything. And I think here, at least here in New York and the high tax states, it's going to implode on them.
I would think that, Kenny, most people, even maybe them, don't think that that's a solution. I hope not. But
have you heard AOC?
Well, my new thing is, I'm watching, instead of somebody saying something stupid like I think she just did or has for a while, understand why they look at things right now and they see this massive imbalance, and they see something's wrong, Kenny. Something is seriously wrong. I mean, they're not wrong with that observation. Even if that's why I temper my criticism of Trump a lot, because when he says something's messed up, he doesn't have a solution. He's dying to break it. It's all for his own narcissistic idea. But the fact is, he's not wrong. You know, he's not wrong in saying something's wrong in Central America and everybody wants to get the hell out of there even though we're giving them money. I mean, there's no doubt that there needs to be some study there. I don't think he's the guy to study it, but
I agree with you, but something is wrong and that's fine, except when is it going to be fixed or can they even fix it? Has it gone, certainly in states like New York, has it gone way to the other side that it's impossible even to bring back now?
Well,
listen, de Blasio's no better, right, for New York City. If you haven't been to New York City recently, de Blasio's no better. What's happened to the city in terms of just the quality of life and the way it feels?
Right. Okay, look at the, we only got 20 seconds, but look at, I'm sure you guys must have a Commonwealth Edison, gathering up $50 from all the poor people and giving it to the top 30 people at Commonwealth Edison. That's not right either. I mean, it's...
No, absolutely not right.
Kenny, talk to you next week, buddy. Be good. I'm looking forward to seeing you on TV as usual. SP Futures up $1.25. NASDAQ Futures up 5.75. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye!
The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, hello, everybody. Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alshie. She's Jay Z on the board. Actually, she sounds much more bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, doesn't she, Brennan?
Well, it's Tuesday morning.
It is Tuesday. An hour ago, she gets her OJ, and she's good to go. S&P futures up $1.75. NASDAQ futures up $8.50. Dow futures are flat. Slow morning so far. Brennan, the interesting thing about the Smollett stuff, we had a big discussion about that last night at the architect and lawyer bar at Club Lawyers. You don't imagine the different differences of opinion on this thing. And and like you were just mentioning on break that, 12 detectives, do you think that case was worth 12 detectives?
No, it wasn't. It was purely a PR thing.
I'm talking about if you and I show up with something that says we got robbed, we got this, they even assign anybody, they even care?
It would go in the bottom of the pile.
Yes.
You would take your number in line. It may be number 135, and we're on number 3, but it would take some time to be investigated.
Does anybody in the city even look at this online fraud, do you think? Or they just say it's your insurance company and whatever. It's like if somebody breaks into your car, they give you a number over the phone so you can hit your insurance. They don't even show up. They don't care.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and in most cases, filing a false police report is a minimal offense, and it's one that never would be prosecuted, and it is to clear the decks. But I think that the problem with the optics of the Jesse Smollett is that he went on national publications to talk about this, and I can just imagine the blowback from a variety of communities had the police just put this at the bottom of the pile and not investigated it because of a person of color and a person who's openly gay in a city like Chicago. And yet, the talk that he should be treated like anybody else who files a false police report is ludicrous.
Oh, sure it is. But
it's not true.
this whole court of public opinion is this, we're going down a road here, and I tell you what, we're not going to like where we land.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now we're talking about public opinion and who we even try and find the crook.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not a big enough crime. Or that one went viral, so we better chase that guy.
The Heater case.
Yeah.
This is a Heater case that is not a murder or an assassination. This is a small-time petty crime of ultimately filing a false police report.
Well, you get to the point, though. I mean, last night we were discussing it, and one of my themes has been, and I don't want to, lob a stone at anybody, but somehow or another, every place we land, and when it comes to the bureaucracy, whenever there's pressure put on anybody, it sure looks like they're incompetent. Now, I don't, maybe it's probably unfair. I don't see the good ones because maybe they don't hit the tape or whatever. But it was pretty clear that during the election process, and I'm sure for however many, 200 and some years we've been around, the FBI was never put in a position during election where both sides were lobbing that the other side was crooks and they should be investigated. And I'm gonna say that
that there was an actual investigation of at least one of the candidates.
Yeah, and we've got this kind of going down, and yet people look the other way sort of forever on both candidates. I mean, it was pretty obvious to all for all that the object of the Clinton Foundation was to gather money from people overseas for their personal use, at least it's on some level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I suspect they put some of the money into the use it was supposed to be. I mean, you look at the IRS and every one of the right-wing, most of the people in the right-wing I love, but the people that are absolute losers, they will talk about this, the IRS not approving these things fast enough. Well, guess what? The things are supposed to be, 40% charitable or 50% and the rest of it political?
Mm-hmm.
Not one of those things does anything charitable. Maybe one or two does. But they're totally, so by definition, they're against the law, in my opinion. and then yet they're pissed at the IRS for not approving them faster. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you look at every level of incompetence here, everybody wants something bent for them, both sides, and yet it looks like when you put pressure on the bureaucracy, they didn't know how to handle it. The FBI obviously did not know how to handle making an investigation during the campaign. They probably should have looked at 3 years before. And all the stuff that Trump and his people are doing, and these people that are going to jail, you know, some for lying, but some for real reasons, they've been doing that for, what, a decade?
Mm-hmm.
And yet nobody seems to catch them. This whole international cesspool of these guys that work one country against another, one of these guys ever gone to jail that we know of, or maybe I would never know, when has there been a profile case of a Manafort or a Flynn that has nothing to do with an election?
Well, I don't think either one of those guys would have been prosecuted had it not been for their role in the campaign.
Right, that's exactly
and
right.
I'm not saying that that's because they were on Trump's campaign. I think it was just because of the having the platform raised because they were involved in a presidential campaign. And it became too obvious to ignore.
Well,
or you could argue that it was because it was a political reason because they were Trump's guys, not Hillary's guys. But I think the same thing would have been true had you found a number of folks in a Hillary campaign who had done similar things, that they also would have been prosecuted if the roles are reversed.
I don't disagree. I guess what I'm saying is somehow or another, when Flynn was given the big speech at the Russian deal and sits down at the table with Putin, Lou says, as a general getting still a salary from the U.S., you can't do that.
Right.
Now, so he was only prosecuted because he was in Trump. But somebody in the FBI had to be watching the same film our mm-hmm. listeners were.
Yeah.
And yet it's all okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, who decides that it's all okay, and then all of a sudden one day it's not okay? It seems to me that maybe we've got too many laws, or we've got somehow or another, the whole stuff is messed up. There doesn't seem to be, you know, the 50s common sense, if there was such a thing, that, you know, we're off the rails here, Brennan, and I don't know how to put ourselves on the rails. Same way with the market is not the market that I love. It becomes a political, it's an index that the president feels is his scorecard, and now it has nothing to do with whether, I mean, in the long run, the companies that get there, I still think and hope, it'll be the ones that make the money and those kinds of things. No, they'll be priced adequately at some point. But right now, I mean, some of the stocks that were up yesterday were up because somebody declared the Chinese economy is all back on two rails after being off the rails a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's 1.5 billion people that suddenly saw the light in 4 days. You know, okay.
Well, now that the Chinese economy is back on track, what does that do for the negotiations between the U.S. and China?
Well, first of all, if it was ever off track, it's not on track in 3 days.
Well, I agree with that. But, you know, what's the other ripple effect, you know, of all of this?
The fact is it was never really off track, probably never really on track.
It's right. And does that mean that an agreement with China is now less likely? And how is the market going to react to that because of the speculation?
Well, and what's the agreement? Is it just, I'm tired of fighting, I'm going to declare victory and say mm-hmm. it's the world's greatest agreement? I don't know. Which is pretty common, especially with this group.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as a trader, as an investor, how do you get your hands around this stuff? I mean, I think right now you need to be somewhat, and I've got my people like this, one man's opinion, you need to be, on the whole, somewhat protected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to at least have some Armageddon puts around.
Well, speaking
but you need
about
to leave a room on the upside.
Speaking about being protected, what happens if the U.S. closes the border for Mexico to trade and people coming in?
I think it's an absolute. Well, one of the people who was mouthing off the other night in a bar, loudly, we don't care. We don't need any of that stuff from like those people. You know. And then finally, we got a guy who's standing up to these guys. You know, all I wanted was come across and be crooks. I'm like, okay, fine. I refused to engage. I mean, there was no way that was going anywhere good.
Mm-hmm.
We get most of, 40-50% of our vegetables, all of our avocados,
yep.
all of our tequila. Get a lot of stuff from there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff that goes back and forth. There's a lot of stuff that we send down there for the auto industry down there. I think we send motors, transmissions, those kinds of things. I don't think do you think Trump knows?
No. But, you know, the big hullabaloo not too long ago about the new NAFTA agreement, the USMCA, between Canada and Mexico and the United States, That has not been approved yet. And
has it been read? Have you seen anywhere yet? The only thing I could determine was one of the big things was some percentage of the auto parts.
Yeah, they have to have a higher percentage of U.S.-made auto
parts. Well,
no,
the people have to be made more than $16 an hour.
Right, yeah, in both Canada and Mexico, they've got to be paid. Well,
Canada they are. Mm-hmm.
But that's not been approved. And what is the impact? And even if it is approved, I've seen some reports lately that the benefits that were supposed to be gained by the new NAFTA aren't real or aren't as good as promoted.
I'm sure they're not. we got a bunch of promoters. The fact is everybody protects their stuff, and the people who do it try and find a way where the Canadians get to protect their dairy farmers because they actually care about dairy farmers. We don't, right? Mm-hmm. We get to protect the sugar people because for some reason they seem to have a whoever the sugar lobby is must be one of the Cabots or the Lodges or somebody who runs the country, right? And we have, there's all kinds of stuff that people will protect on both sides. I mean, the Japanese, which are not part of this, they're going to want their rice protected because they don't want to have no rice farmers in the entire country, which they would have if it was all of a sudden they had free trade with us or with Vietnamese or the Thais, right? And probably if we didn't have some, at one point, there were electronic things that if we didn't have tariffs here, the Japanese would have put all our guys out of business. So,
well, let's go back though for a moment too. What happens if the U.S. really closes the border between Mexico? What is going to be the financial and the economic impact on this country, and how are the markets going to?
How the markets react is that's becoming a different question. That's what I'm kind of talking about in loose ways. Markets might react positively because all of a sudden, you know, our would-be dictator is getting even stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, I think the back and forth is billions of dollars a day.
Mm-hmm. It is. Those are the numbers that I saw.
Yeah. Now, are we going to have, but everything the guy does, there's exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is he really going to say that not one avocado comes across the border?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there going to be an exception for that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look how many exceptions there were to, the Canada stuff.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm going to say that
even the tariffs. When you look at the tariffs, the steel tariffs had exceptions to certain companies.
But if the tariffs and, I'm going to say in terms of money, the tariffs and wood products coming from Canada have to be a far sight bigger than milk going to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, just so we're clear, a tariff is something we pay.
Right.
And when the tariff, now you listen to, Our leadership, they're going to talk about this.
Chinese write a check to our treasury.
No, they're also going to say that the Canadian tariffs on dairy products is burying our industry. But let's be clear. If it's not as simple as on milk, of course, because it's on all kinds of stuff. But if it was on milk, it's a dollar extra or $2 extra that the Canadian government puts a tax on Canadian people buying milk. We send them a gallon of milk for a buck. They put a $2 tariff on it. The Canadian person is paying three. They're paying for it. We're not. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that drops the amount of stuff that is imported, which has an anecdotal problem with our farmer, the answer is probably yes, that he's being hurt as well, but it may not be. I mean, in some stuff, the stuff is solely sourced.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, all the stuff I say, Brendan, maybe you can take with a grain of salt, but when it comes to this kind of stuff, I'm pretty good at it. Every single product has a different tariff effect than every single one, whether or not it has. I'll give you a quick example. I'll keep this brief. If a shot glass comes in from China and it's a buck and the tariff is 10%, and there's no other place in the world where shot glasses are made, I guarantee you that the price here is going to be pretty close to $1.10.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese guy probably doesn't even feel it.
Right.
Because there isn't really an alternative. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, chances are, if you look at the way you do economics graphs, when you go to IKEA to buy the damn thing, it's probably going to be $1.09 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because IKEA maybe will eat the penny, or they'll eat half a penny, and the Chinese will eat half. Somebody will eat it along the way, right? But it may not be exactly $1.10. In the purest form, it would be $1.10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now if the shot glass comes in from China and you charge them the dime, and yet four feet over are shot glasses from Korea or Canada or Thailand, which don't have a tariff. And, oh, by the way, there's four people here to make it, and the price is a buck. I'm going to say the price of the Chinese shot glass is on the shelf at a dollar, and the Chinese ate 9 cents of it, and IKEA ate 1 cent of it. So in one case, you are harming the Chinese, mm-hmm. even though we are essentially paying the tariff, right? Correct?
Yes.
But they've cut back on their price, and they're somehow eating the 10% either out of profits, or they don't sell them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, and most of them are in the middle somewhere,
mm-hmm.
where the country that comes in. But make no doubt that the person writing the check, when it hits the property here in Long Beach or someplace, they say you got $100,000 worth of shot glasses. Fine, give me a check for $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt that we're paying that check.
Mm-hmm.
How it backs up around the place, it makes a difference depending on. And there's got to be what, a million different products.
Mm-hmm.
So to get out there and say the Chinese are doing this or we're doing that, no, you have to go through every single product and say, okay, who's doing what where? Or the Chinese might get smart enough to say, we'll ship it to Korea. Korea ships it here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, the world is a massive marketplace, and people are pretty darn smart. You know, along the way, these types of
but
things.
But doesn't
happen.
That argument go against individualism in the United States,
yes.
making America great?
Yes,
because
absolutely.
The marketplace is so intertwined right now. The global marketplace is so intertwined, and this goes back to the movement offshores of American industries. Now, the fact that you don't your situation about the shot glasses. 50 years ago, there might have been 5 companies or 10 companies in the United States that made comparable shot glasses.
Right.
Most, I'd say 8 of those are now, maybe 9 of them, maybe all 10 of them are moved over to Southeast Asia for cheaper costs.
Right. Well, I mean, there have been people here. I mean, I'm sure you've been, you're not Mr. Bar Guy, but you're Mr. Coffee Shop Guy, you know, high-end sort of dude. I'm sure you've had people say, well, screw those Canadians, we'll put a tariff on autos made up there or trucks made up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we can say, whoa.
Stop. Wait a second, except those are still our cars.
Yeah, except this is not the Canadian Mountie. You know, this is a Chevy
mm-hmm.
that they're being made up there. It's okay, well, they're adding value to it. And by the way, most of them they're selling up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we not want to sell Chevys up there, or do we want to sell Chevys up there? And if the Canadians, if it's easier to produce the ones you're selling up there in Toronto, maybe, or, but now we're also shipping the engine, the transmission, the differential, probably from here.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the differentials are made up there and some of them are coming down here. But I challenge any one of the stooges, including us, sitting in the bar or coffee shop, tomorrow morning, sit there and go, okay, how the hell does this all work?
Mm-hmm.
The steel is coming from Canada down here. We're making the transmission here. And now that's going up there. And they're making the truck there. And oh, by the way, the truck's coming back here. I challenge anybody, including myself, who's pretty good at numbers, to trace one product.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me how, you know, in a market, tell me how this all friggin' works.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in Washington are dumbing this stuff down to the point where our people are picking up on the dumb part of it. And they're saying, well, why is this a problem? Trump knows what he's doing. His guys will, no, this is, you need your best and the brightest on this to figure out. Otherwise, you're like the guy on Front October. You arrogant ass, you've killed us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so we put a tariff on a Chevy that's being sold in Vermont. Now, is that really what we want to do when the transmission, the motor, and the seats are all made here?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Well, it's okay to tax a Chevy in Vermont because GM is closing its plants, harming the American public, but you don't want to do it at Ford, which is opening new plants.
Right, except they close theirs too. I mean, it's hard to keep a, you know, that's why when you start messing with the market, you don't know what you're doing. I mean, you don't know the ramifications. So when you ask me what's going to happen with the Mexican border, how many exceptions are there going to be?
Mm-hmm.
How many people are going to cheat? How mm-hmm. many people, how many of the avocados are going to miraculously start coming from Vietnam? Because we send a ship, Mexicans send a ship to the middle of the ocean, turns around and comes back this way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that we should run out and buy about 8 bottles of tequila tonight.
<'Cause we don't laughs>
Especially the good stuff.
Yeah, get the worm in the bottom.
And but you better. How long do avocados stay in the fridge? Not that long, I don't think.
I don't think so, no. Not very long at all.
Well, we better be doing some guacamole. I'd say we should go to Mexican tonight and order some guacamole just while we can still get it.
And put it in the freezer.
Can you freeze it? I don't know. That'd be kind of watery. I mean, anyway, but, no, but I mean, these are questions, though, Brent. No, obviously, people would like to hear, and I would love to be able to say, well, hell, if we go through with this, buy these five stocks and short these five others.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's that simple. Do you?
I don't think it is that simple. Again, because of the interconnectedness on the global market, as in the example you gave, that the ship is a Vietnamese registry, a Korean registry, that leaves Monterey, goes out in the ocean, turns around and come back and says now it's a Korean product, not a Mexican product.
I mean, I think it's probably harder to do that than just turn the ship around, but, it's like, but again, I think there are people that are capable of taking a, for lack of a better term, a DNA test for oil.
Mm-hmm.
When, like, we embargo Iran. Okay? And there are people who could tell you, oh, wow, this oil has a signature of Iran or Venezuela or North Dakota or someplace. I think there are people who are smart enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, do we? Or is it somebody who's connected that miraculously turns Iranian oil into somebody else's oil and it goes for full price?
Well, you're getting into some conspiracy theories right now.
Well, when you looked at the Saddam Hussein situation,
mm-hmm.
and there was the embargo on that guy before we invaded, right? The embargo was on Iraqi oil.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, okay, for medical reasons, they get to sell the oil, but they can only sell it for, at the time, I'm going to say the world rate was $35. Now, it's never 35 because some oil is real good and some oil is real crappy. So, but there's always a benchmark, correct?
Yes.
I mean, it's like what's corn on the Board of Trade for? Type red, type B, or some, I don't know. You know, there's a grade, and then there's grades that are better, grades that are worse when you deliver, and there's a price adjustment. Anyway, so what they said is they can't sell it for that much money. They can only sell it. Let's pick numbers. They'll say they can't sell it for the $30 world price. They can only sell it for $15.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens there?
They'll find a way to send it to somebody else and resell it.
Yeah, and guess who the two guys were in the middle? They were making most of the 15. Were Saddam's two sons. But once it got on the market, Exxon's willing to pay 30. So you come with them, you come up to them and you say, I got this $15 oil, but guess what? I want $6 for myself.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? You're still getting a deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, it's now 21 instead of 30.
Unless somebody is right on it, and probably the people that are doing that are tied in with some law enforcement or something, or who even knows? Maybe the CIA or someplace. Somebody, that $15 is now in play.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, the Manafort's of the world, those kinds of people are all over it. Because whenever you have an economic discontinuity like that, people, the scalawags will show up.
Mm-hmm.
Because wait, there's, how many barrels a day going at $15 and the real price is 30? Sounds to me like,
there's money to be made.
There's money to be made. Just like an expressway here mm-hmm. in Chicago. How much is the price? $400 million. Well, we're going to pay you $500.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but Brendan's running for judge. I think he needs a few tickets bought. Okay, mm-hmm.
I've got a golf outing coming up.
Yeah, by the way, this golf outing, it's a good place. But mm-hmm. where do you see the lunch we're going to have? What are you mm-hmm. talking about? I'm not even going to show up. How much you want? You know, it's nothing to do with the golf outing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whenever
and you get to hear my speech if you come to lunch.
Well, so you ask, I'm going to say that there is going to be some huge winners and huge losers on this thing in Mexico if it goes through.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a California avocado grower that is all over this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we have tequila makers up here, but...
it's not only the commerce that's coming across. There are people who live in one country and work in the other country. They're going back and forth. There's a tourism industry going both ways. I mean, legitimate tourism, even if it's Mexicans coming to the United States or U.S. citizens going to Mexico. Shutting that down is going to have an economic impact on the tourism industry.
You think the golf courses at Cozumel are happy about this?
No.
I know a lot of people that are scheduled to go down there.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been.
I've never been to Cozumel either.
I mean, I've never been to Mexico.
I've been to Mexico. I've been to Cabo San Lucas a couple of times.
When we were doing all our work down there at PTI, it was Dan was doing most of the traveling, and we were doing some seminars down there. And actually, Dr. J was doing some of the seminars. He's never worked for PTI, but he was going down there. He and Dan actually wrote the national test for futures down there.
Interesting.
So I'm on the phone with him, and I go. So you guys had a test for a few, just because the peso contract was just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And we helped them, you know, sort of design it. And, you know, there were some people from the CME, too, not just us. And they, I go, where'd they get the test? Well, they do now. Well, who wrote it? Well, we did. But you know what? They're both of them, you know, they're very capable. My brother was a member of the Board of Trade for a long time, and they knew how to trade currency. So, you know, you just make sure that the people at least knew how the darn thing settled and whatever. I mean, you know, they're perfectly capable of that. Now, I don't think the peso is even on the CME anymore. I'm not sure. The peso contract, but it was big for a while. But a lot of those currency markets are right back into the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really that much on exchanges anymore, which is, you know, in my mind, of course, not a good thing. But obviously, the banks love it because they got captured clients. But no, Brendan, when you ask that question, I would love to. I mean, if I could get a guest that says, "Oh no, buy these five stocks, and if they go through with it, you'll be rich next week." I mean, I'd love to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, if I start lobbing them out there, I don't know. Do you know any avocado stocks? I don't. and what if they're California avocado stocks? They might go up, not down.
That's right.
S&P futures up 175. NASDAQ futures up 750. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for
for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Brendan Cornan. She's Jay-Z on the board. He said the durable goods orders came out minus 1.6. They were thinking about minus 2.1. That's kind of an odd number. It's all over the block. Well, actually, some people know Bloomberg has them at 2.1 drop expected. CNN has them at 1.8% drop expected. So we had retail sales were down yesterday. We had constructive spending up a little bit. The ISM and manufacturing index was up a little bit. So there's a little bit of a tug of war on some of these numbers. SP futures up a dollar. It's been like that all morning. Nasdaq futures up 6. Dow futures are actually up 9 now. They were unchanged earlier. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 64 now, 0.5%. FTSE up 58.8%. CAC around up 17.3%. Over in Asia, very slow. Nikkei down 3, call that flat. Shanghai up 6, call that flat. Hang Seng up 62.2%. Again, oil rallying again today, although not as much, but 61.98. It was over 62 last time we checked. Brent is 69.15. Brent's going towards 70, it looks like. That spread is now $7.90. Natural gas, 271. That's been stuck there a while. RBOB, 190, up a bunch since earlier in the winter. It was $1.35 somewhere in the early December area. So that's, you know, sort of the moon. Gold's only down a buck, 12.93. Silver down 8 cents, 15.01. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Chicago weather today is still a bit chilly. We've got a high of 55, low of 36, mostly cloudy today. Phoenix is also cloudy with a high of 87, low of 58. In basketball last night, the Bulls lost to the Knicks 113-105, while the Suns beat the Cavaliers 122-113. In baseball, the White Sox lost to the Indians 5-3, Cubs lost to the Braves 8-0, and the Diamondbacks beat the Padres 10-3. In NCAA women's, Baylor beat Iowa 85-53, and Notre Dame beat Stanford 84-68. Finally, the Blackhawks lost to the Jets 4-3 while the Suns were off. No accidents to report. Back to you.
Brennan, just on the sports slash business side of the world, since we are Stocks and Jacks, what do you make of this last month with these Blackhawks? I'm not the Blackhawks, the Bulls.
You know, speak of a team that that's kind of bipolar. What are they trying to do? Are they trying to make the playoffs, or are they trying to get the number one pick?
The Bulls?
Yeah,
they're not. They've shut it down for a month.
When they traded for Porter, they won and they won a couple of games that could be the difference between them and Cleveland.
And it must have given Paxton the grabber.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't want that. He wanted no part of that.
No, but right now, they're pretty close. I mean, when you look at what happened last night when the Suns beat the Cavaliers, there were two other games that the Bulls won at a time when Cleveland also won against bad teams. And the difference between the Bulls and the Suns the Bulls and the Cavaliers right now, I think, is two games. So it could be that Cleveland gets into the 14% range for the number one pick, whereas the Bulls will have a 12.5% if they finish with the fourth worst record. And then they put on this push to, and they won a few games that, you know, you wonder, how do they do it?
Well, their starting lineup with those three guys in there is, hey, John, how are you?
Good morning. You're good. Yourself?
I'm hanging in there. We're talking about the Bulls, and they've got, when Markkanen, Levine, and Porter are all in the line at the same time, they're capable of beating a few of the mm-hmm. teams and actually playing reasonably competitive ball. But that's not what the ownership wants. But I mean, I refuse to go to this day. I won't go to Cubs Park because I was a season ticket holder in those 4 years where I couldn't give them away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was only paying, you know, $65 a ticket. What, there's Bulls tickets, there's skyboxes. How would you fill up a skybox here tonight? What if it's Brendan Neal and Dewey Cheatham and Howe, a law firm. I mean, how do you what do you do with that stuff? You just put them on your desk and say thank you very much. I mean, obviously the firms that are buying it must have more money than God. They don't care, but I think nobody doesn't care when you can't even give something away you paid $300 for. I don't know who's that rich. Just saying. You guys don't think there's any, there's no limit to how bad you can make your team before your people.
No, I think that like the Bulls and just like the Cubs, they had a marketing thing that allowed them to charge higher tickets even for a bad product. And in the case of the Bulls, it was a reminiscent of the Bulls dynasty. In the case of the Cubs, it was Theo with his record in Boston saying, trust us, in a couple of years we'll be good. And in his case, the Cubs won the World Series in 2016. So there's an ability of the Cubs to keep charging high rates, even high ticket prices, even if they go into the tank again. And there was a business study done for the Cubs when the Ricketts bought it that the Cubs fan base was so strong that they could pretty much charge anything they want, and the lovable losers would still be able to generate high ticket prices.
Well, you have to shift. You have to be able to shift people. You weren't going to get me to pay for something I couldn't give away.
Right, but remember when the Cubs were purchased by the Ricketts family, there was a season ticket holder list that was years long. It was like when we were kids getting tickets for Bozo Circus. You know, people would apply for tickets for Bozo Circus 3 months after the child was born in hopes that they'd be able to get to Bozo Circus by the time the kid graduated grammar school. The list of people on the Cubs season's ticket holder list was so strong, they knew that they could lose a number of their folks.
I knew people on that list that during those 4 years got called probably 10 times and they all said no.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but there were still more people behind them.
But I'm saying, but there were, the list was fictional. It wasn't like you could have called somebody halfway through the year and say, bring in a check for 10 grand tomorrow when they would have got it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so the timing of it was, it's becoming way more, Jan, is it the same way down there that one of my buddies was at opening day sitting with, actually it was an Oakland A's executive. He said something now like 70% of all the tickets, people whose fannies are in the stands did not buy the ticket. It's a huge number. Maybe it's not that high. I mean, it's like 60 or 55, but where it's all corporations buy all the tickets or people buy them and then they parcel them out. That the people sitting there, right. I know Maddie's firm has like 8. And, you know, it's all clients, and once in a while they say there's no client for tonight and they parcel them out to the employees and they just have them. But nobody ever in their seats has paid for them except them. And I guess it's you know, I sat up in the upper deck. I had the front row in the upper deck, which was, I really liked those seats. But, most of the people around me, they were their seats. And whether they still are or not, I don't know, because they've gotten so much more expensive. It split them up, you know, 2, 3, 4 ways type of thing. That's the reason why, actually I asked Tom Ricketts, he was at one of the, stack things. And I said, Mr. Ricketts, I'm one of your season ticket holders and have been a while. I said, I'm sure you know this because, you trade on the trading floor, you're no dummy. I said, I'm really a wholesaler for you. I said, and it's where I go to 20, 25 games, and I sell the rest, and people that are, you know. And I said, but it's reaching the point where I cannot get face value for your tickets. And if you stop me from being a wholesaler, I'm not buying 80 when I can only go to 20. I mean, I can't do it. He goes, oh, we know we're kind of at the top of the blah, 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 give me some BS. But it got to the point where Don and I split the seats, and so Don called his one guy who owns a trucking company. He always bought like 20 games from Don. He says, can you help me with maybe 25 this year? And the guy goes, well, not really. I don't really want the 20. So, I mean, you are a wholesaler at that level, unless you are, you know, Brendan, Jen, you know, in the Three Stooges law firm, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, most people are, even the people at the Hawk games, the blue collar people that own them, they got to be down to 3-4 games a piece per year, right? They're so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at some point, they benefited by that, with the business becoming, is there no end to that water hose, I guess my saying? Is there nothing that says the business, will cut back? I mean, I know you're not gonna get the skybox out of the lobbyist firm in Washington no matter what, right? But how tight are these other guys? Is there nothing that says, looks like some of the ones at Sox Park have been giving up, mm-hmm. skyboxes.
Yeah.
But, John, what's it like down there? Is every skybox full? Is every the first 20 rows all grabbed by people, even though the rest of the place might not be full?
Well, one, it depends. The sport do pretty well. They do pretty well with the football, of course. But a good example, like of what you're talking about, would be the Coyotes. So, you know, the hockey team out here, you know, pretty much can't give them away. As a matter of fact, at my youngest school, they give us tickets, you know, to go see, you know, professional hockey. And now this is a team on, you know, brink of making the playoffs. And yeah, part of that's the product. They didn't spend the money on the product to get the players. But even beyond that, they're having a good year. So you know, some of the others, it's, you know, similar kind of thing, you know.
What about the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could, you know, pretty much, you know, walk up there and walk into, you know, any game. But I think it's all because I have some buddies. I think it's one of the grocery stores where they've bought a lot of boxes there. Some of the corporations, same with the Suns. You know, even with the downturn of the Suns, a lot of corporate box ownership there. And as far as season ticket holders, boy, you know, it's got to be tough there. But I know a lot of people that split these things, just like you're talking about. But a lot of corporate ownership, Tom.
Well, I went to, I was going to see some of the stadiums there for a while, and this has to be, oh God, Brennan, 10 years ago maybe. And I went to see Pittsburgh. What a beautiful spot.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Friday night. It was a gorgeous night. So I, you know, I stayed close in some kind of a, you know, hotel on that side of the river, which is not so nice. you want to be on the other side of the river and walk across. You don't want to be on the side I was on, but their season ticket load at that time, I'm going to say, guys, couldn't have been 5,000 to 8,000. This is before they got good. This is when they were really crummy, like I said, 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And the weird part was they get a pretty decent walk-in crowd. So everybody's trundling across the bridge on foot, walking up, and they only have like two windows open. So I'm looking for one ticket, right? I can't buy one because there aren't season ticket holders trying to off them. And I didn't want to get in this line. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? The line had to be 50 people long. So finally some guy goes up, hey, I got one of a buddy I'm supposed to go with, got the flu, but I said, fine. And I paid him for it. We sat in real nice seats right in front of the bullpen and like second row. And but I mean, they probably had, I'm going to say, 8,000 there, and probably 3,000 or 4,000 of them walked in. You know, I mean, but here there's no such thing as a walk-in crowd, is there, Brennan? I mean, Sox Park maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to walk up to Wrigley. Actually, you probably could go up there and try and get a one was turned back into them, but it's a very small percentage. But yeah, I would say their season. What do you think the Sox season ticket holder is now? I think it's 8,000. I don't think it is.
I don't know if it's that high.
What's the on the absolute worst night? I was going to say when it rains down there, but you guys got a roof. On the absolute worst night, Jan, what's the announced attendance?
I gotta think it's in, you know, the single digits, like 7,000 to 8,000.
Okay,
because
that's sort of how you figure out what the season ticket load is, right? Now the Sox are they're a little sneaky because they have all these 20-game packages, Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll on a Tuesday night, where you know it's raining or something, they'll announce 8,000, but then on a Wednesday night where it's raining, they'll announce 12,000, mm-hmm. which means they sold 4,000 of the packages,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, Cubs are the absolute worst when you can see nothing but seats.
Mm-hmm.
They still announce
40,000.
No, I bet they're 32. They still have single game tickets and so forth, and you still have to have some for walk up, don't you, or whatever.
Yeah, but I think that the walk-up tickets in those cases are the ones that will be sold and people will go to the game because that's where you have the tourists coming in or you have people even in the Chicagoland area who couldn't ordinarily get tickets, so they will go to those games and buy the ones that are on sale.
Well, everybody does it through StubHub and stuff now, but I think there's a limit. I'm saying the Cubs, whatever it is, I think they have. I'm going to say it's more like 28 or 32, but I don't know. It'd be more of a Matty Weber question, but that's a big difference, boy, mm-hmm. between that and 8
yeah.
or 9 or something.
Great.
All right, John, what do you make? We had a huge rally yesterday. We still can't get our gold and silver to do anything. We've got our XLEs moving a little bit. What do you make today? Do you think, you know, we got the, everybody's talking about if the Fed doesn't make the market go up, that Trump's going to put even more pressure on the Fed and blah, blah, blah. Does he think they can buy his way to a market rally for 18 months? Maybe, you know what? Maybe they can.
No, so far it's worked, right? So, you know, I think we'll, you know, we're not going to have the lifts we had in the past, but, you know, I think we're still going to have our, you know, consistent move up here.
Really?
You know, a little bit of a stair step action, things like that.
Well, but yesterday was a hell of a rally.
Pardon me?
Yesterday was a hell of a rally.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think this is gonna, you know, continue. You know, somewhere down the line, like, you know, I've talked about it, it's the, you know, of course, going to end. I think it's going to be, you know, somewhat of a hard fall. So, and that's kind of why, you know, we keep protecting our position.
What is somebody much closer to the border, if there is a hard stop, what does that do to the Phoenix area? You guys are away from the border ways, but what does it do to Tucson and the other places?
Well, yeah, I mean, Tucson's, you know, extremely close, and you know, a little bit more. And you actually have some retirement communities that are even closer, like about 40 miles south of Tucson. You have what they call Green Valley, which is just a retirement town, and that's just a hop and a skip, you know, from the Mexico border. And then you have Douglas, and you know, certain places that are relatively close. So, Phoenix, you know, not so much, but some of the southern cities.
Do people commute from and to Tucson across the border to work?
Yeah, yeah. There was, when I lived down there, there was a bit of that going on because it's only about an hour, you know, as far as that goes. But a lot of those people that you know, work back and forth there, they would live in some of the towns in between Tucson and Nogales. Like I said, there was that Green Valley and several other towns that are a little.
So Nogales is the crossing point.
Correct.
So on a given day, if you went down there and just sat there and watched, what would you see coming back and forth across the border? People, goods, mostly people. What, I'm not talking about illegal. I'm talking about, are people going back and forth to work? Are people, obviously, goods are flying back and forth both ways. How much?
Oh, yeah, absolutely both. You know, I've been down there. You'll see semis. You'll see you know, cars, people going back and forth. So you'll see some foot traffic going back and forth. You know, people park, you know, on one side or the other.
Are there factories just on the other side of U.S. companies where U.S. executives still live in Tucson?
Oh, there are plants that are called maquiladoras, which have industrial on both sides of the border. Part of the product will be done on the Mexico side. Then they'll bring it over for finish in the United States.
Really?
Or vice versa.
Is there a lot of that going on in Nogales, John, or is that more in California?
I think it's more in California. There's not in Nogales down there. There's not a lot of industry there.
What towns are you talking about, John? Brendan, where that stuff happens?
There were just some, I think even as far north as Tucson, but there were some, and in California, but there were some in some of the smaller towns where there was public financing to allow the companies to build a factory not too far over the border for finishing products. I mean, it wasn't a lot of big industry, but there were several companies that built a finishing plant on one side of the border or the other.
Where do most of the goods come across? It's hard to say. I mean, the agricultural goods come across the whole way, or is it mostly California? I mean, or is it Texas? I mean, clearly, Arizona, New Mexico, it's mostly desert down there, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Isn't it, Jen?
Absolutely. I think, to answer part of your question, I think El Paso, both for the factories, I think there's a lot of that factory situation like you're talking about in El Paso also.
Well, so it would affect your area, but it's hard to say how much. I mean, if it's all of a sudden.
Well, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. To put a finger on it, you know, and figure out how much that is, I would have, you know, no idea how that is. But it would affect things, because there's not any of these border points you go down to. There's always traffic and a lot of commercial traffic, and so there's definitely a lot of activity.
Has there ever been anything remotely close to a dead stop before in our lifetime?
Not that I remember.
Not anything.
Me either.
I thought we had some issues with a couple of agricultural, what do I want to call them, parasites or something, where we stopped imports of some goods or something a few times, and we were inspecting everything for some lettuce blight or something. I thought there have been a couple times where that happened. I don't really recall that there's been something, they've been looking for, but some kind of blight or some kind of disease or something affecting one of the, where there was a shutdown vase vis-a-vis locally on some agricultural goods. I mean, we've had that, haven't we?
Yes.
And that been...
I've seen that happen with, I want to say there was a problem with some, either avocados or lettuce, or maybe both, coming out of Mexico.
I'm thinking it was lettuce.
But basically, they have a way of tracking this agriculture now, so they're able to take care of the problem relatively quick, if you follow me.
Yeah, I think it was lettuce. I'm not sure what it was, but I'm sure it wasn't tequila. It wasn't bad tequila. Just saying.
No, because that'll take care of itself.
Yes, it'll take. But the poor worm dies, but once he dies, you're good to go, right? Is that
exactly. So it's going to kill anything in there, Tom.
All right, John, we've seen a pop up in Bitcoin today. Does that mean our gold's finally going to start to move?
Well, as far as these alternates to the dollar and things like that, who knows? It did pull back pretty hard there after having that run, but it's hard to say with all this stuff, but doesn't make sensical moves anyhow.
Whenever you're involved in one of these things, obviously it's up $100 from the $11.98 it was a few months ago, so we're sniveling a little bit, but we're still happy that it's up some. I just can't get over to how the stock parts are dragging. The GDX is below the GLD, and I still can't get over to XLE dragging compared to oil, because there's really no
oil. Right. They used to lead. Right. Yeah. They used to lead. Yeah.
What at some point does this Schlumberger become a buy, or is this place just dead? I was talking to Dan yesterday. Yeah, he goes, they're mostly deep water.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit on that where they're saying, at some point here, this has got to be considered, quote unquote, a value play, just because of how, beaten down it is, and the assets they have, and sales aren't what they used to be, but they're still doing relatively well in that area, though.
Well, our man Dan, PTI's president, said they used to be that they're real big and they're the man in deep water drilling, and a lot of the stuff is not deep water. But I've got these guys. We're March. Last May, the thing was $75, $76. And I think the year before it was $89, wasn't it? So, it's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was definitely late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, this is the reason why the XLE can't get out of it. So it's the third biggest stock, right?
Yeah, it's a big component of the index, right?
Well, we've had a huge run in the QQQ because the fangs have come flying back. We've got Amazon back over 1,800. It's down a whole 44 cents today after being up $31 yesterday. If the Qs, they run out of gas here, obviously they didn't run out of gas yesterday. They were up a percent and a half. Are we reaching the tippy top in this move for these fangs, or do they got more to go, you think?
I think they have a little bit more to go, and the general markets too, but I think people always have their eye on some of these technology stocks, so I think that will extend a little bit further, Tom.
Well, you think this stuff is all even. I've been investing. I got an awful lot of new people in January, so I've been investing a lot of dough since then. A lot of dough. How's that for Southside? and I'm going to say I got most of it, Jen, in Russell, and most of it in the QQQ, because I thought those guys were a little low there in January coming out of the last quarter last year. And I'm going to say that there's been a tremendous difference in performance in the QQQ, because I'm chasing calls in there a little bit, a couple of bucks. Nothing, actually a terrific performance considering it came up from 161 and it's 182. Russell, my calls are still 5 hours out of the money. I haven't had a chase there at all. So the Qs has really outperformed the last 8 weeks vis-a-vis the Russell. So, that was pretty good. I wish I'd have put everybody in the queues and not in the Russell's
right,
done. Russell's
right,
done
right.
Well, but the.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's where the interest is. And I'm stating the obvious there, but And if I remember right, that's when we had the pullback. That also pulled back harder than the general markets, too, so therefore.
All right, John, have a good one, buddy. Talk to you on Friday. Thank you very much. SP Futures up 1.5. NASDAQ Futures up 650. Thank you, Brennan. Thank you, Jay-Z. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.